Did you know the coal industry is producing millions of tons of radioactive materials? Listen up. This is Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org. Our addiction to coal as an energy source has a hidden side effect. Over time, we are creating a huge radioactive burden on land, sea, and air. Hundreds of thousands of tons of thorium and uranium, including enriched uranium, that could be used by terrorists from coal-fired plants and industrial sites. Planet Earth is a radioactive place. That's why it is still molten at the core. Fortunately for life, almost all of the dangerous radioactive materials were left beneath a protective layer of rock. Except for a few pockets of rich uranium within mining range, cancer-causing radioactive materials are only lightly sprinkled in the outer layers of Earth. Humans insist on dragging these poisonous materials to the surface and pouring them out into the air for the insanity of nuclear weapons and reactors. But unseen, beneath the surface of our energy economy, coal, too, is adding unbelievable amounts of radioactive waste to your lungs, country, and the global environment. Sometimes, one enemy will tell you the real goods about another. The nuclear industry, that glutton built from public tax money, is anxious to tell us the real dirt about their competitor, Mr. Coal. Thus, the publicly funded Oak Ridge National Laboratory, infamous for nuclear mismanagement, by the way, hosts an article titled, Coal Combustion, Nuclear Resource or Danger?, written by Alex Gabbard. Here is the long web address for the full article, including his calculations and sources. It's www.ornl.gov/info/orNLReview/rev26-34/text/colmain-html. Hope you got that or recorded it. You can also find it at www.ecoshock.org in the podcast blog. Gabbard's main argument is simple. Coal plants emit more radioactive materials than well-run nuclear plants. Sadly, as industry insider publications like Nucleonics Week report, there are no perfectly run nuclear plants. They all have breakdowns and some near meltdowns and radioactive releases beyond their published specifications. But let's take a closer look at coal. It takes a huge volume of coal to fuel each and every coal-fired plant. Entire mountaintops are removed, and giant craters are formed just to feed American energy needs. The majority of America's electricity is still generated by coal. Within all that tarry black rock is the usual scattering of radioactive materials common to Earth. But what happens when that is concentrated in the furnaces? Where does it go? According to Alex Gabbard, in the year 1982, the typical coal plant released 12.8 tons of thorium, a radioactive agent known to cause cancer, particularly thyroid cancer. It also pumped out an astounding 5.2 tons of uranium. Worse, the burning process tends to concentrate the most unstable form of uranium, namely uranium-235, the fuel used for nuclear reactors and for making atomic bombs. The typical coal plant created 74 pounds of uranium-235, but it takes as little as 55 pounds of enriched uranium to make a typical atomic weapon similar to those tested by China. We need to know where that potential terrorist gold mine goes. Gabbard's reasonable figures suggest that 174 coal plants in America of 1982 released 801 tons of uranium, including 11,000 pounds of uranium-235. Coal contributed another 1,971 tons of thorium that year as well. In 1982, the world burned an estimated 2,800 million tons of coal. That adds up to 3,640 tons of uranium, with 51,000 pounds of uranium-235 and 8,900 tons of thorium. In just one year, our coal habit produced more than 10,000 tons of highly radioactive material. Coal burning has only increased as China and India come online with super-industrialization. But assuming the world manages to cut back by the year 2040 to 2,500 million tons of coal, 10,000 tons less than was burned in 1982, there is still a significant radioactive legacy left on Earth. Between the years 1937, when such records began to be kept, and 2040, the coal industry would have produced 828,000 tons of uranium, including 5,883 tons of uranium-235. Remember, it only takes 55 pounds of that stuff to make a bomb. We will also have added more than 2 million tons of thorium. Using government measurements, Gabbard estimates a release of 477 million millicuries just in the United States by 2040. Globally, almost 3 billion millicuries would be released. And that's if we manage to cut back to pre-1982 levels, which certainly isn't happening now. Gabbard couldn't foresee the giant impact of China's coal burning, which has already bypassed the United States, and which has far fewer scrubbers and other pollution controls. The real figures are likely much worse. How is this possible? Gabbard writes, quote, "During combustion, the volume of coal is reduced by over 85%, which increases the concentration of the metals originally in the coal. Although significant quantities of ash are retained by precipitators, heavy metals such as uranium tend to concentrate on the tiny glass spheres that make up the bulk of fly ash. This uranium is released to the atmosphere with the escaping fly ash at about 1% of the original amount, according to NCRP data. The retained ash is enriched in uranium several times over the original uranium concentration in the coal because the uranium and thorium content is not decreased as the volume of coal is reduced." End quote. In any particular year, a study of the radioactive emissions from coal plants would show levels that are almost negligible compared to the natural background dose of planet Earth. But, quote, "because the half-lives of radioactive potassium-40, uranium, and thorium are practically infinite in terms of human lifetimes, the accumulation of these species in the biosphere is directly proportional to the length of time that a quantity of coal is burned," end quote. In other words, every year we depend on coal is a year we add more thousands of tons radioactive materials to the so-called background. Lasting hundreds of thousands of years, our radioactive legacy will outlast any human civilization. We will be known as the nuclear dumpers. Gabbard concludes, quote, "although trace quantities of radioactive heavy metals are not nearly as likely to produce adverse health effects as the vast array of chemical byproducts from coal combustion, the accumulated quantities of these isotopes over 150 or 250 years could pose a significant future ecological burden and potentially produce adverse health effects, especially if they are locally accumulated. Because coal is predicted to be the primary energy source for electric power production in the foreseeable future, the potential impact of long-term accumulation of byproducts in the biosphere should be considered." Yes, indeed. Let's compare the radioactive burden of nuclear plants or coal plants to alternative energies like solar, wind, geothermal, or tidal plants. It's a difference of night and day, a dark and scary night and day. What happens to this bounty of coal-borne radioactivity? The majority of uranium is attracted to the tiny glass particles in coal emissions. About 99% of it is supposed to be trapped by smokestack traps and scrubbers before they hit the surrounding air. That still means that people living near coal-fired plants are bombarded with radioactive materials that escape, and not just locals. The uranium glass particles fly up into the upper atmosphere to be transported around the world. People in North America breathe in China's radioactive coal exhaust, and Europeans take in America's pollution. So do Canadians. That's enough particulate matter to form a dirty coal ring around the planet, a kind of radioactive smog laden with tiny heavy metal particles as well. Here's an odd angle, hardly discussed outside of military circles. The concentration of uranium-235 in coal ash is strong enough to provide materials for nuclear weapons. Here is Gabbard's diplomatic warning back in the 1980s. Quote, "radioactive elements released in coal ash and exhaust produced by coal combustion contain fissionable fuels and much larger quantities of fertile materials that can be bred into fuels by absorption of neutrons, including those generated in the air by bombardment of oxygen, nitrogen, and other nuclei with cosmic rays. Such fissionable and fertile materials can be recovered from coal ash using known technologies. These nuclear materials have growing value to private concerns and governments that may want to market them for fueling nuclear power plants. However, they are also available to those interested in accumulating material for nuclear weapons. End quote. Well, where are we dumping this radioactive coal ash? Practically everywhere. Some has been shipped overseas. It has been dumped in the oceans. The radioactive material will never weaken in terms of human lifetimes. It can hardly be guarded, and yet it is a weakness in terms of national security for every coal-burning country. Gabbard concludes that in 1984, all the American nuclear plants combined consumed about 540 tons of uranium fuel, almost 300 tons less than the 801 tons of uranium produced by the U.S. coal plants that year. So that makes nuclear energy better in his eyes. He fails to mention that there is no known safe place to store nuclear waste from reactors, and that all nuclear proliferation to this day has come from reactor byproducts and not from coal ash. At least the nuclear guys can give us another reason why coal is not the answer, and not even a sustainable energy source for humankind, even without the terror of carbon-based climate change. A more ecologically balanced person would conclude, we shouldn't be dumping more and more radioactivity on future generations. We don't need nuclear power or weapons, and we can't keep on burning coal either. Clean energy does exist, the kind we can use for thousands of years, leaving the Earth's surface clean and natural. Let's use that. Listen to the full-time environmental radio at www.ecoshock.org.